It is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival is Thursday, August 22nd through Sunday the 25th. This music festival will feature a variety of local and international folk artists, including Jerry Douglas, Elephant Revival, The Honeydew Drops, and more. Tickets and more information are available at FayettevilleRoots.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we begin a series on what the Affordable Care Act will mean for Arkansans. In the first of five reports, Jacqueline Froelich outlines how many parts of the new act will work.
Plus, a national convention devoted to recipients of the Purple Heart is coming to Rogers and will include a keynote address from Eric Shinseski, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And we spent some time with an Ozark ritual, Decoration Day, at a local cemetery.
First, hunger relief organizations are expressing concern over recent efforts to remove the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, from the federal Farm Bill. While the Democratic-controlled U.S. Senate has passed a farm bill that includes nutrition assistance, the Republican-led U.S. House passed a version eliminating SNAP altogether. Kathy Webb of the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance says efforts to gut SNAP could have wide effects in Arkansas.
About 500,000 Arkansans are currently receiving SNAP benefits, and that has an impact for those families who are receiving the benefits, enabling them to get more nutritious food to meet the needs of their family. But it also has an important impact on the local community because typically those SNAP dollars are spent in local stores.
Webb says every dollar of SNAP benefits usually calculate to $1.79 in additional spending because low-income families who use those benefits are then able to make additional purchases. She says SNAP benefits sometime account for 45% of business in small-town grocery stores in the state. She says claims of mass fraud in the SNAP program are inaccurate.
Most people are only on SNAP for about 8 months. You know, that has increased maybe a little bit up to 10 months for half of all the new SNAP households. And SNAP has one of the lowest rates of abuse of any program that's out there. The fraud and waste in SNAP is about 1%.
Webb says putting SNAP benefits in the Farm Bill historically has been a successful way of addressing both agricultural and hunger issues.
The Fayetteville Public Library is eyeing expansion of their campus. Last night, the library's board of directors approved a $2 million offer to purchase the former City Hospital property just south of the library on School Avenue. If the offer is accepted by Washington Regional Medical Center, the site would be home to an 80,000-square-foot expansion to the Blair Library, which would include space for more materials and for more programming, as well as a 750-seat auditorium for bigger events. David Johnson, executive director of the Fayetteville Public Library, says while the library's offer is less than the appraised value of the lot, the proposal is attractive for a simple reason.
Our offer doesn't include any strings in regards to having to have the property rezoned for any, say, if it was an apartment or anything like that. It is a zone as downtown general DG designation, and that zoning would allow the library to come right in and build our expansion.
If the offer is accepted by Washington Regional, the land purchase would be paid for with funds from the library's reserves. But Johnson says other means would be necessary to pay for construction costs.
What we would do is we would begin first with a capital campaign to see how much funds we could raise privately. And then at that point, we would potentially look at other avenues to make up the gap between the building construction cost and how much we were able to raise from private donations.
In 2000, city voters approved an 18-month temporary sales tax to help bridge the funding gap for construction of the library's current facility.
Several central Arkansas leaders are asking ExxonMobil to disclose information about a stretch of pipeline in the Lake Maumelle watershed. Questions remain about how cooperative Exxon will be after it failed to respond to previous requests for documents. North Little Rock Mayor Joe Smith was among those who signed the letter to Exxon requesting information. He says moving the pipeline will likely be a costly venture.
The number I'm hearing and the time it would take to relocate it outside the watershed, you know, is extremely high. $30-40 million, and Lord only knows how long it would take, you know, to acquire the right of way and make the change. You know, maybe 8 to 10 years.
The group says they want a response from Exxon within 2 weeks. Mayor Smith says he doesn't know if he's confident that the company will meet the deadline, but is sure that ExxonMobil is working to come up with the documents.
The Arkansas House and Senate Education Committees will meet for a second consecutive day today to discuss the new Common Core curriculum scheduled to take effect this school year in Arkansas high schools. Lawmakers are taking comments on the new standards. Proponents say the Common Core will better prepare students for college and work. Yesterday, during meetings, Democratic Representative John Walker of Little Rock questioned whether the new standards would help students who are already struggling.
You can't have high expectations of kids who can't read when they're going into the ninth grade. The only thing you can do is cause their frustration levels to increase.
Tom Kimbrell, the state's education commissioner, told the committee's additional help may be required for some students, but raising expectations is important for student success.
It will take a lot of effort. It's not easy work. And we have to have not only expectations of the school staff, our staff at the Department of Education, but we have to really instill into the students that they can do this.
Common Core standards have been phased in at the kindergarten through eighth grade level since 2010 in Arkansas. The standards have been adopted by all but five states.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals' five-game winning streak is now over. Last night, the Arkansas Travelers beat the Nats 10-3. The three-game series against the Travs continues tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale.
Mostly cloudy tonight with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 69 in northwest Arkansas, and a 50% chance of showers and a low of 76 in the Arkansas River Valley. Partly sunny tomorrow with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midday with highs in the lower 90s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms and lows from 69 in northwest Arkansas to 75 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Not everybody supported the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act, but many agree Arkansas needed some kind of help when it comes to providing health care to more of the state's residents. The most recent report card from the Commonwealth Fund ranked Arkansas third worst among states regarding all health indicators and dead last in categories such as adults over 50 receiving recommended screenings and preventative care. Over 500,000 adult Arkansans under age 65 carry no insurance. On this edition of Ozarks at Large, we begin a multi-part series on what the Affordable Health Care Act will mean for Arkansans. In this first installment, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich introduces us to many of the concepts and plans that come with the act.
The Patient Protection and Affordable Health Care Act is designed to help the uninsured and underinsured secure comprehensive and affordable private health care coverage. In the scheme of things, that population constitutes 14 million Americans. That's because an estimated 80% of us are already covered by workplace insurance or federal entitlement programs. The 20% targeted by the act are self-employed, part-time workers, those with no workplace coverage, and Americans with no insurance. As many as 500,000 Arkansans are expected to participate, according to the Arkansas Insurance Department, which is facilitating health care reform in Arkansas. Deputy Commissioner Cynthia Crone is overseeing the new health insurance exchange in Arkansas.
I think we have a lot to be proud of in Arkansas and how we are responding to the Affordable Care Act and in specifics the marketplace. First, we in Arkansas are a state partnership marketplace, which means that Arkansas determines which plans go on the marketplace for consumers to shop. Those are approved by the state insurance department. We also monitor those plans. We are able to do consumer assistance, which only four partnership states in the nation are doing. And what that means is that we do an advertising campaign. You may begin to see the rollout of the Get In campaign, where Arkansas residents will know how to access the marketplace.
Arkansas Health Connector is our online site, and it will guide Arkansans towards purchasing private insurance.
So you will see an ad campaign. There is a website, and that is www.arhealthconnector.org. And people can go to that website to begin to get familiar with what is coming. On October 1, they can go to that website and be linked directly to the federal health insurance marketplace. They now can see what are options coming, what is this all about.
And this online marketplace will allow Arkansans to easily cost compare insurance plans, which will be spelled out using standardized language. No more small print, no more sneaky stuff, hence the title Patient Protection in the law's title.
So, for example, a consumer may want a higher deductible plan and lower copays every time they go to the doctor, or somebody may think they don't need lower copays, but they'd like a lower deductible so that their costs begin to be paid sooner. So the consumer will get information to help them make those choices, and then they can go to the marketplace where they have actual, what we're calling apple-to-apple comparisons, so they can compare the plans in a way they understand, choose the one that's best for their needs and their budget, and enroll.
And you'll be able to browse bronze, silver, gold, and platinum plans.
And what it means is at the lowest level, bronze, the health insurance company pays at least 60% of the cost of benefits, and the consumer on average would pay 40%. And it goes up to the higher levels. So at platinum, the health insurance company pays 90%, and the consumer would pay 10%, but the cost of that plan is higher. So the lower the cost of the consumer, the less the insurance pays, and the more the consumer pays. The silver level plan is the one where all the subsidies are applied against, and that is the plan level where the private option consumers will shop. So that's a plan that generally pays 70% and the consumer pays 30%. But there are cost sharing reductions in addition to that. So those who are at lowest income would not end up paying more than 5%, for example, of their costs versus that 30% in a silver level plan.
On average, insurance will cost between $200 to $400 per month. And Arkansans who cannot afford all that money will receive help to pay their premiums with sliding scale subsidies. Exchanges are not for casual shoppers, meaning if you are under a workplace plan, you cannot abandon it for a cheaper deal. Again, unless your workplace insurance rises above 9.5% of your income, or if employers' plans cover less than 60% of covered benefits. No American will be forced to spend more than 8% of their income on health care insurance under the Affordable Health Care Law. And several types of helpers will be on hand, including sanctioned commissioned insurance brokers, as well as navigators and guides.
And the guides and navigators will be exactly trained alike, credentialed alike, but they are in every county. They are local community-based organizations who hire people to connect with people in their community. So we felt like it was really important for the consumer to have someone they knew, someone they could trust to provide the information. So 29 organizations across the state have contracts now to hire individuals who will become trained and licensed to do education and actual one-on-one enrollment assistance with consumers to help them understand insurance terms. All of this is new for many people. We've had so many people never insured or underinsured. Help them understand, help them know how to compare plans, and help them with the technical aspects of enrolling. So we plan to have 500 of these guides across Arkansas or more, and we're real excited to see how that program rolls out.
According to an Arkansas Insurance Department press release issued in mid-June, 5 companies have expressed interest in selling insurance policies on the exchange. Arkansas Blue Cross, Blue Shield, National Blue Cross, QualChoice, United Security Life and Health, and Celtic Insurance Company. By the end of July, we'll know in Arkansas what companies will be selling insurance on our state marketplace. A major provision of the Affordable Care Act is that states must launch an online marketplace by October the 1st for open enrollment, which will continue into March 31st.
Open enrollment the first year is going to last until March 31st, 2014. And that's just because it's the first year. Later years, it will be a shorter open enrollment period. Those eligible for private option will be able to come in at any time that they become eligible.
To be covered by January 1st, you must enroll by December the 15th. Now, insurance companies, experts say, have made huge profits from unwitting consumers who purchase basic catastrophic coverage, which, for example, doesn't cover things like hospitalization, imagine. So one of the best things about the Affordable Care Act is that insurance companies can no longer reject you based on pre-existing conditions, up your rates, or short shrift you.
And the average insured individual is paying an extra $1,500 a year to cover the uninsured. So we will take that away when everybody is insured. We're not having this cost shifting. So it's a way to not only get people healthier, decrease the costs, and eventually the costs of care, but it's a real economic boost, not just for the hospitals to keep healthcare local, but for the whole economy when we do that. And so I think it's important for people to know that doing this is estimated to bring an extra $550 million into our economy at the same time that we save lives, get people healthier, and lower our insurance costs.
And finally, under the new law, traditional Medicaid recipients will be moved into the marketplace via Arkansas's private option, the only one like it in the nation.
Under the private option passed by the legislature, those newly eligible for Medicaid, which would be your non-parenting adults, like an adult male, single, those people above 17% of the poverty level, but under 138%, will be able to be eligible for private option, which gives them the private insurance shopping ability.
So what will happen if you don't enroll? What will happen?
For those who don't enroll, the Supreme Court said everyone must enroll. It's a personal responsibility to have insurance. So in the first year, in a household, every adult who doesn't enroll would pay a $95 fee and about half that for children. And people say, well, that's not very much. Well, the next year it goes up to $325 per adult in the household and half that for children. And the third year it goes up to $695 per adult plus half for children. So by then you're really paying what you would be paying for your insurance with your help, and you don't have any insurance. So projections are that very few people will not follow the law, will not enroll. Perhaps under 2% of the population will not do what they need to do and pay a penalty.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the Arkansas Health Connector, you can go to the website hbe.arkansas.gov. And to learn more about the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, you can go to healthcare.gov.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, we'll talk with Pete Cashmore, CEO of the tech news website Mashable.
We're in the middle of this information revolution. It's kind of like the Industrial Revolution. You know, every 100 years or so, you get this massive wave that comes through and changes absolutely everything.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, this afternoon at 1 on KUAF. Ahead on Ozarks, Decoration Day at small cemeteries is a long-held Arkansas tradition. Many local communities set aside a day, often a Sunday, to gather, to remember, and to honor friends and relatives. We listen in to one recent Decoration Day in about 15 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
Early next month, the organization called the Military Order of the Purple Heart of the USA Incorporated will hold its annual national convention in Rogers. The organization, chartered by Congress, was formed in 1932 for the protection and mutual interest of all who have received the Purple Heart. It is unique among veteran service organizations in that all its members were wounded in combat. John Bircher is national spokesman for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. He's with me on the phone from his home in Orlando, Florida. Mr. Bircher, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be with you.
Tell me a bit about this organization that's been around for 80-some years. What does the Military Order of the Purple Heart do?
Well, Military Order of the Purple Heart is a veteran service organization, much like the American Legion or the VFW, except we're the little guys. The American Legion with 3 million members, VFW 2 million members, we have 45,000. So we're not the biggest, but we truly believe we're one of the best. We don't have posts. We don't have bars. We don't play bingo. Everything the military or the Purple Heart does is focused on service to veterans. 90% of our contributions, donations, go to service to veterans. We have a national service program that places a veteran service officer at every VA medical center and many clinics who will sit down with a veteran, and that's all veterans, not just Purple Heart recipients, and not just advise them, but literally fill out the paperwork for them to help ensure they get all the benefits they're entitled to. Now, that may be if you're homeless, we'll help you get a home. If you're jobless, we'll help you get a job. If you are an entrepreneur and would like a small business loan, we'll help you get that. These national service officers are trained by and certified by the VA, and so they are the experts on how to ensure you get every benefit that you're entitled to as a veteran. Not just veterans, but their families as well. As I say, we're the little guys, 45,000, but that's a good thing. You don't want a whole lot of combat wounded veterans. In fact, there's something like 1.7 million recipients of the Purple Heart, but more than half of those were killed in action, because one of the two ways you get the Purple Heart is either be killed or wounded in action.
You mentioned that you're the little guys, but you do have a pretty big figure delivering the keynote in Rogers early next month, and that's the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Well, I think that shows the interest and the support of the Department of Veteran Affairs in our organization. Eric Shinseki, former Chief of Staff of the Army, four-star general, and now Secretary of Veteran Affairs, tries to come each year to our convention to brief our members on the latest changes going on in the Department of Veteran Affairs and keep us updated on what's happening there. We love having him come. He himself is a two-time Purple Heart recipient, and so there's a natural affinity with Secretary Shinseki.
I imagine it is a unique fraternity. There is value in knowing that every member has received the Purple Heart, has been wounded in combat. That cannot always be an easy thing to talk about. I imagine it is somewhat helpful for the members of your organization knowing that everyone has a similar type of experience.
I'm glad you asked that question, Kyle, because in fact, when you go to a chapter meeting, that is your local community level chapter, going to one of those meetings, for me and for almost everyone, is almost like a group therapy session. You will talk with each other about things that you would never talk about at home. And it is a therapeutic thing to be able to exchange your experiences, exchange what's going on with you, what's going on with them. And I travel around the country participating in a lot of events that involve the post 9/11 wounded warriors. Last month I was down in Orlando. There's a wonderful group of guys called the Wounded Warrior Amputee Softball Team, all amputees. And they travel around the country playing in various events with celebrity teams. Well, last month they hosted a kids camp and brought 20 kids age 8 to 12 to Walt Disney World, ESPN Wide World of Sports for a camp. And all of these children were amputees. So it not only gave the kids a chance to meet and play with other kids like themselves, but also to see what happens when you grow up and interact with these wounded warriors who themselves have the same kind of disability. So there are lots of things that the Military Order of the Purple Heart does like that, that reaches far wider than just within our own little community.
I'm curious, there are all kinds of places you could have had a national convention. Why Rogers?
Well, you know, 4 years ago, we held our national convention in Rogers. And the guy who was the mayor at the time and is now one of your congressmen did such an amazing job of welcoming us, Steve Womack. Mm-hmm. And the hotel literally bent over backwards to make sure that we were taken care of. They did such an amazing job. Everything about that experience was unique for us. And each year we try to hold the convention in a different part of the country, but when we got the invitation from Rogers to come back, it was almost a no-brainer. It was such a positive experience, the community there welcoming us, and all of the politicians from the area, and especially Steve Womack. It was such a positive experience, we just had to go back.
John Bircher is national spokesman for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. The national convention will be held in Rogers in early August. Mr. Bircher, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks for calling, Kyle, and we really look forward to seeing everyone there.
Youth Home is the oldest and largest psychiatric treatment facility for adolescents in Arkansas. Though it's in Little Rock, Youth Home provides services for thousands of teens from around the state annually. As Malcolm Glover from our content partner KUAR reports, a recent financial gift is expected to help keep Youth Home stable.
Youth Home is a private nonprofit psychiatric treatment center for emotionally troubled young people. A $75,000 donation to the organization has enabled officials to buy vans and make other facility upgrades. David Napier is Youth Home's executive director.
For the agency, it's a wonderful resource for us to be able to do some of the things we desperately need to do and have had to put off. Transportation's a critical issue for us. When the young lady talked about what they use the van for, she mentioned outings, but they use it every day during the school year for transportation to their school and back. So it's been a real blessing to us as an agency to be able to provide new transportation.
Phoebe and Dan Miller III made the donation to Youth Home, citing the organization's 46-year record of helping teens with emotional problems become healthy and productive members of society.
The girls are so appreciative, and that makes it all worthwhile, too. To me, I've never been one that wants to send flowers for memorials that are going to die on somebody's gravesite. I would much rather send a gift to someplace like Youth Home, where they can really put it to work, and I feel like they get a lot more bang for the buck.
That's Phoebe Miller. Her husband Dan says he believes it's important to look after the needs of young people. Dan Miller admits that he's pleased Youth Home is making a place where children can live comfortably in society. He became emotional when some of the young residents thanked him for the gift.
You know, when you hear kids speak from the heart like that, it kind of, you tear up a little bit. And I'm glad they're pleased and they're happy. I hope it makes a difference in the way things function around here and they get a kick out of it. And it'll be a lot of fun.
Chrissy Chatham is the organization's development director. She says the donation ensures that the children of Youth Home have two new vans that will take them on recreational outings and to important doctor's visits and court hearings.
We have kids from all four corners of the state and everywhere in between in our residential program, and these kids need help not just for themselves but for their families too and for the communities that they're going back to. Our kids have problems in school, and so they come to us and their problems are dealt with and they're given the tools to go back to their home school and to their home communities and be strong people and grow up and help in their own communities also.
Chatham says the Millers have given small financial gifts to the organization in the past, and we're able to make this one-time significant contribution that will have a positive impact on Youth Home residents for the next decade. Youth Home's main campus is in Little Rock, but it offers specialized programs for over 1,600 children and families across the state. In Little Rock, I'm Malcolm Glover.
It is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This would be the time when Antoinette and I look at each other and go, it's what date?
July has been going along at a normal July pace.
No.
Feels like it should.
It does not.
Okay.
It does not. And the problem is people like you accept this, and you're not fighting against it.
Exactly.
What?
That's just the problem.
What, Don Quixote, I may ask, will you do to stop this windmill that is time?
Rude.
Okay, brood. Bring
rude. I said rude.
Or brood. It'll work. Racist. While you're brooding, you can go see a Jane Austen novel on stage.
Yes.
How is that for a transition?
That will help you make time go slower.
Perhaps. It's a show called Emma, and it's an adaptation presented by the Fort Smith Little Theater. It's a romantic comedy set in England in the early 1800s, when one assumes things moved more slowly.
Yes.
About a young woman who is pretty, rich, and smart, and doesn't have enough to do, so she decides to matchmake for her friends.
And all sorts of things happen.
As a friend of mine says, and wackiness ensues.
Yes, exactly.
Showtimes are 8 o'clock Wednesday through Saturday, and tickets are $10 at fslt.org. And if you want to plan ahead for some theater, guess what opens Friday at Rogers Little Theater?
The King and I.
Love that show. Love that show. Can't wait. We'll have a story about it Friday in What's Up.
Yul Brynner, one of the seven actors, I think, in history to win an Oscar and a Tony for portraying the same role.
How does he remember this stuff?
I don't know. I don't know.
I barely know where I am. Mm-hmm. He remembers that.
Yeah, no, I
and
don't.
And they say women can't forget.
I guess I remember the important things.
Ah, good job. Thank you.
Well done.
Quit picking on Kylan. I'll go away now.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
In late July and early August, not the busiest time for theater in the area, but as Becca just mentioned, Rogers Little Theater is opening The King and I this weekend. Fort Smith Little Theater in the middle of their adaptation of Emma.
And Rogers Little Theater, one note, they are in need of two spotlight techs and one lighting board tech for the entire run of The King and I. So if you're available, you can contact them at rogerslittletheater.com and help them out.
Nothing like just a few days before production looking for help.
Absolutely. Both of those companies that we just mentioned are already beginning the process of staging their next productions. Auditions for Fort Smith Little Theater's presentation of 12 Angry Men are Monday and Tuesday next week, and that's July 29th and 30th. Auditions begin at 7 both evenings at the theater, which is located at 401 North 6th Street in Fort Smith. The play will run September 5th through the 14th, and the cast includes 14 men between the ages of 20 and 8.
80.
80, I'm sorry. I was distracted for a second. If it's called 12 Angry Men, how are there 14 men?
Well, there are 12 men. Then there is the bailiff who comes in for notes.
I don't know this play, so.
Okay. 14 characters.
Well, there you go.
Rogers Little Theater will also have auditions on July 29th and 30th for their staging of The Wizard of Oz. The auditions begin at 7 each night at the theater in downtown Rogers. The auditions will be based upon singing, dancing, and acting. And if you want more information about the auditions, you can go to rogerslittletheater.org. The performances, September 13th through the 29th.
A couple of other area troupes have completed auditions and have recently announced casts for upcoming shows. New Threshold Theater will present 13, the musical. It's about a young man's anxiety as he faces his 13th birthday sometime this fall. Cast members include E.J. Cronister as Evan, Lucy Rossi as Patrice.
Landon Calhoun as Archie.
Yes, Jacob Benson as Brett. Maylee Lofton is Kendra. Reed C. Carson will direct the play, and you can see the entire cast list and learn more about New Threshold Theater at newthresholdtheater.com.
And Arts Live Theater also has the cast ready for their next play, The Neverending Story. Sean Barrett, Olivia Carter, Hayden McClure, Olivia Moore, Brendan Wolfe, and Yonda Vestwig are included in the show that will be directed by Jason Sewell.
And a man certainly familiar with acting, William Shatner, will be in Fayetteville this January. Yesterday, the Walton Arts Center formally announced the veteran of Star Trek, T.J. Hooker, and Emergency 911 will bring his one-man show called Shatner's World, We Just Live in It, to Northwest Arkansas on Saturday, January 11th at 8 p.m. Tickets to Shatner's World and tickets to the full 2013-2014 season go on sale tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Tickets for this particular show will range from $50 to $125.
And if you prefer your entertainment in the soil, gardening in the 1880s and today will be the topic of Clayton Conversation Sunday afternoon at 2 at the Clayton House with fifth generation Fort Smithian John Bruce as the featured speaker. He's the owner of Squash Blossom Health Foods in Dora, Oklahoma. He'll discuss the methods and benefits of organic gardening that would have been used and enjoyed by the family of William H.H. Clayton, U.S. Attorney of Judge Isaac C. Parker's Court. The Claytons lived in the Clayton House, obviously, at 514 North 6th Street.
Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
One of the connections to this region's culture that goes back generations is a tradition still taking place in many small communities. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis explains.
The months of summer mark several different seasons. Baseball is in full swing, the smell of grilled hamburgers permeates the air, and airport terminals fill with people taking vacations from the day-to-day hustle and bustle. But for natives of areas in rural Washington County, the summer months contain another type of season entirely. Memorial Day weekend through the month of August marks the season for cemetery decoration days, on which families congregate at the cemetery on the same day each year to remember their deceased relatives.
Last year, I think we started about 10:30 or 10:45, somewhere in there. We was down here eating at 11:30.
The third Sunday in July marks the decoration day for Sunset Cemetery, which is located in the extreme southeast corner of Washington County. Some of the graves there date back to the mid-1800s, when the then-remote hill country was first settled. Though it doesn't cost anything to be buried in this particular cemetery, you have to either have lived in the Sunset community at some point in your life or be a blood relative of someone who has. That tenet makes Decoration Day somewhat of a family reunion. People travel from Fayetteville, Little Rock, and even all the way from Kansas for the annual get-together. Though there are regularly new faces, typically following new burials in the year prior, everyone present is connected in some way to this tight-knit community. The agenda for sunset decoration is similar to that of decorations at other cemeteries in the communities of Hazel Valley, Brentwood, and elsewhere in the area. People begin showing up at around 10 in the morning. Some begin unloading their cards in advance of the potluck lunch to be held in a few hours. Others catch up on the latest gossip or on major life events if they've traveled from outside the area to be there. But before too long, the church service begins in the old one-room schoolhouse that, until the 1960s, housed grades 1 through 8 for generations of Sunset children. It starts with a cappella gospel music. Followed by a sermon.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures.
Once the sermon is finished, those who attended the service retreat to the weather-worn tables outside the cemetery, made from red oak planks and stretching a few hundred feet, to make final preparations for the potluck lunch. At these types of country gatherings, everyone typically brings 2 to 3 dishes. In most years, care must be taken to fit all the dishes onto the table, everything from chicken and dumplings and beef brisket to potato casserole, salads, and any variety of bean dishes, and that's not even counting the various pies, cakes, and pudding-like dishes for dessert. Fellowship continues while people eat lunch, sitting on tailgates and in lawn chairs, but once lunch is over, into the cemetery people move. The few plastic flowers that have survived through the past year are replaced with new ones, fresh in color and unfaded by 12 months of Ozark Mountain weather. Most years, the ground is so dry from the summer heat that a long-stemmed screwdriver is necessary to pierce the ground enough to plant the artificial flowers.
We have such a cloudy day.
Some prefer to use plastic wreaths or other decorations, but the meaning is just the same. No matter how far they have journeyed, everyone is there to remember their long-gone relatives, just like generation after generation has done before them. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
What drives someone to hike to the North Pole or row across the ocean alone?
I was doing something, you know. I was out there on the edge, stepping in the ground where nobody had ever been before, you know, exploring.
I'm Guy Raz. On the next TED Radio Hour, we're taking you to the edge.
To the edge, that sounds tailored for me.
From NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
For the second consecutive year, a concert in the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series will invite musicians from around the region to play the music of one of their contemporaries. Saturday night, ensembles of all sizes will play the compositions of Rick Salonen. Rick is an instructor in the music department at the University of Arkansas and recently was awarded an Individual Artist Fellowship Award from the Arkansas Arts Council for his music composition.
Saturday night, Rick Salonen's music will be performed by ensembles of different sizes. Duos, trios, quartets, septets, even the 19-piece big band he's part of, the Fayetteville Jazz Collective. Last week, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, about the upcoming concert. He told Robert that his serious concentration on composing jazz began about 9 years ago when he moved to Arkansas.
A lot of these tunes are somewhere during that time period. But even before that, I remember I was the kid in high school who said, I'm going to write that out for our pep band, you know. So if you want to go all the way back to that, we could. But really in the past, since being here in Arkansas, it's really written a lot of jazz things.
And how long have you been involved in music as a music student or a performer?
My whole life I've been, you know, since high school, but 30 years, I guess.
What drew you into music? Was your family also musical?
Yeah, my dad played the accordion. Being from northern Michigan, a lot of polkas up there, so the accordion was a big instrument. And my mom played the clarinet. Uh-huh. And so all of us kids, we also played instruments. And
so truly, it sounds like really from a very early age, not only were you drawn into music, but it sounds like you had ears and eyes to compose.
Yeah, I think so. I always heard things and like I said, you know, wanted to write things out. I just had that itch, and when I'd hear, you know, other bands play, but like have that desire to, I want to do that, you know, I want to do that. They'd say who the arranger was or something. It's like, I want to do that someday.
That's, you know, very cool. Mm-hmm. And obviously having the opportunity to work with an 18-piece jazz orchestra must have really opened up your...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these guys are great. And it's great working with such top-notch, you know, people, because you can just... You can basically write what you want, and, you know, they can pretty much handle it, you know.
Well, you've been a real asset to the orchestra as well, to the Jazz Collective, in that not only are you able to help interpret the charts that you guys get, you've got some great charts, but you've done a lot of original charts, and you've been inspired by some of the musicians in the band to write music for them. Mm-hmm. So that must add another dimension to your whole world of music.
Yeah, it's great to feature people after playing with them. One of the tunes on our that we're going to do is a Claudia Suite, and it features Claudia Burson on the piano. And so knowing the type of player she was, it could tailor make, you know, the arrangement right to her playing. And then, you know, writing a tune for somebody in the band, then the whole band sort of gets behind it. And it's like, oh, that's one of our, you know, this is written for us, and that was written for one of our players. And everybody really digs in, and it's great to play that for the public, because it's like, hey, these are, you know, these aren't people coming into Arkansas. These are your people, you know, your musicians, people that come right from the good state of Arkansas, to be able to play it for the other people around here is great.
Well, and as I hear you describing this with great enthusiasm, it harkens to the days of Duke Ellington, who part of the success of that orchestra, besides having brilliant musicians and besides the genius of Duke, mm-hmm, Ellington, was a lot of what he wrote was for the soloists. In other words, it so connects you in a much deeper way to the music.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, tell me what you've got cooking for this upcoming concert.
Well, one thing we wanted to do is have a lot of variety. So there's a lot of tunes, a lot of different variety. There's swing tunes, Latin tunes, ballads. There's some really interesting. There's one tune kind of that I call it's a mashup, where you're basically taking two tunes and just kind of mashing them together at the same time. If you ever watch the show Glee on television, they do that. That's kind of a thing they do on Glee. Is they'll take two songs that don't really relate to each other, and they'll just kind of mash them together.
So you've done that for the
collective. Yeah, one of the tunes is called Goodbye Pork Pie Hat Mashup. And so it takes the classic...
The Charles Mingus tune.
Yeah, the Mingus tune, and it mashes up with Disco Inferno from the 70s. So.
Oh, my God. And, how did the Fayetteville Jazz Collective members respond to that?
Oh, they thought it was great. It was like, wow, this really worked.
And what else?
It's just a strange idea. But another tune that we're going to do that evening is something that we have in the books. It's called Minor Occurrence. And I always wanted to... You know, every big band has, when you've gone to traditional, you know, big band concerts, if you've seen, you know, Count Basie or Buddy Rich live, the very first tune they play is usually like a really fast opener. They call it a fast opener. So it was like, oh, I got to write a fast opener, you know, because every band has a fast opener. So the Minor Occurrence, I don't know if we're going to play it first or not, but it's in that style of a very fast opener. So it's real energetic and just burning off the page. And, some of the tunes, we kind of blurred the line between, is this jazz music? Is it classical music? What is this? You know, and it's like Duke said, it's just music. You know, you don't have to put a label on it. So the tune that we're going to premiere the night of the concert is has sections in it that kind of are sort of in that vein that kind of blurs the line between, you know, it's just music. You know, it doesn't have a label to it. Some of it is kind of, it's almost classical sounding, but then there's a samba feel in there. And so.
Well, let me make sure I'm understanding right. So this is a composition that has never before been performed. It'll be other than in your rehearsals. This will be the world premiere.
Yes.
What's
right.
the name
so
of
you
this
can't,
piece?
You can't go to New York City and hear it. You can't go to Chicago and hear it. You would have to come here to Fayetteville to hear this world premiere, and it's called Collective Disturbance Number 1.
What can you tell me about the variety of ensembles that we'll be performing throughout the evening? Because this also gave you an opportunity not only to work with the orchestra as you have been, but to write some smaller ensemble pieces. So mm-hmm. what kind of variety should we expect there?
There'll be some pieces from just played by trio, Claudia Burson Trio, and then we add a soloist to the trio and get a trumpet solo or a flugelhorn solo and with the trio. And then there's going to be to me, what I think is going to be one of the features of the night, now they may not think so, but is this guitar duo between Dr. Greason and Ben Harris on guitar, and they're going to do a guitar duo with bass and drums, and so that will be unique. And then there's a five-horn combo that will do some of the tunes, and then a big band, and also the Hogtown Gypsy Jazz Group.
And you wrote some music for them?
Yeah, I did some arrangements, and they're going to basically, you know, put their spin on some of those. One of the other things that we're going to do special is that this just happens to be the 100th anniversary of the premiere of The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. So that piece of music, it's 100 years old, but yet, wow, it's still as modern as ever. And I took that and sort of did a arrangement of some of the parts of the Rite of Spring, because the Rite of Spring is, I don't know, 50 minutes long or 45 minutes long. And so this is taking certain parts of the Rite of Spring, and we did a big band arrangement.
To your knowledge, has anyone ever attempted that before?
To my knowledge, no, I don't think so.
That sounds, yeah.
And so there, it ended up being very surprising how well Stravinsky relates into big band. You know, you would think, could that even work? Could you even, you know, play something by Stravinsky? And it's like, surprisingly, yes.
Rick Solonen's compositions will be performed Saturday night at Walton Arts Center as part of the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. Doors open at 7:30 and music begins at 8. You can learn more about the series at our website, KUAF.com, and more about jazz in the area at the website for the North Arkansas Jazz Society, digjazz.com. Rick Solonen talked to Robert Ginsberg last week. Robert hosts the program Shades of Jazz on KUAF every Friday and Saturday at 10.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Brett Bielema Swing for the Cure Golf Classic is Friday, July 26th at Shadow Valley Country Club in Rogers. This 18-hole scramble tournament offers morning and afternoon flights, lunch, prizes, and more. Proceeds to benefit Susan G. Komen Ozark. More information available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Crossroads.
Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Crossroads?
It's in Madison County between Goshen and Huntsville.
Imagine that's what the crossroads refer to?
Could be.
Could be. Time to give away some tickets to the Naturals and to the movies.
Okay.
What we call the family pack. It was 110 years ago today that Ford Motor Company sold its first car.
Oh.
That got me thinking about all the cars that are named after places.
That makes me think I need a new car.
See where we are with that. Malibu, Yukon, Durango, Tahoe, Dakota, the list goes on. But as far as I can tell, no car model has ever been named after a town or city in Arkansas.
Oh.
So we think it's time to get creative.
Okay.
So for the family pack, two winners will each receive 4 vouchers to see a Naturals game at Arvest Ballpark this season and 4 passes to any area Malco movie theater.
Sounds good. So what do I have to do?
Okay. Let's say you mm-hmm. are the person in charge of naming a brand new car, and the model has to be named after a town in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
What would you name the car? And we're giving you a specific type of car, a convertible mm-hmm. or a classic muscle car.
So do you want 2 answers?
You can give us 1, you can give us 2.
Okay.
But tell us if you're naming the convertible or the muscle car. And muscle car, like a Camaro or a Mustang, one of those classic muscle cars.
Okay.
The name has to be an Arkansas town or city.
Okay.
The one that you would think would fit best.
That would best name
right.
that convertible or best name that muscle car.
So in other words, if I had given you an SUV,
right.
Smackover might have been a good one. So that's kind of
sure.
where we're going.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good. I like it. And
okay.
how can people give us their answers?
They can send suggestions for either or both to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. That's ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. We're looking for the most appropriate names for cars using only towns or communities in Arkansas, a convertible and or a muscle car.
And they have until tomorrow morning because we're going to chat with a special
yeah.
judge who's going to review and pick our winners.
That's right. We've sought out a judge who has you know, special expertise at this sort of thing. Knows cars.
Knows cars.
Yes.
Perfect.
So, you know, by mid-morning, give us your tomorrow. By
tomorrow.
Mid-morning tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
give us your suggestions. Again, ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. 2 winners, 1 for each category. 1 will get 4 tickets to the Naturals at Arvest and 4 tickets to any Malco movie area theater. So both winners get all of that.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grada.
Thanks so much for listening. You and I are back together tomorrow.
We are tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large.
What's on tomorrow?
Stories.
Okay, very good.
You have to tune in to find out.
That's right. We don't want to give it all away.
No.
Including the answers to our quiz. Thanks.